At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, November 25th, 2025, and you're watching The Program with Ted Rall and John Kiriakou. Thanks for joining us, and good morning, John.
Good morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we have lots to talk about, and this is the last live show of the week, so we have to try to anticipate what's going to happen for the next 5 days or so. So let's talk about like sort of the options on the menu. The Pentagon is investigating Mark Kelly, senator, military veteran and former astronaut, Democratic senator from Arizona, for his role in the video urging American troops to disobey illegal orders. Also, lots of stuff going on with Ukraine. The U.S. met with Ukraine, with Russia in Abu Dhabi. The EU is starting to draft its citizens, and even the French are contemplating restoring draft registration, maybe even the draft conscription. Trump actually had not a great exciting idea, but he actually had a healthcare idea for the first time. So that was that any Republican president has actually made any major moves on healthcare. Mm-hmm. So that's notable, but the Republican Congress is squishing it. And finally, the Zoomers are not protesting. And an old enemy of mine who writing for the New York Times, but had a good piece, Brian Nyhan, had a good piece about like why that might be. And of course, I would love to talk to you about the designation of a fictional organization as an official State Department designated terrorist organization. So lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about. Let's talk about Mark Kelly first.
Let's do it.
You know, in a normal world, Ted, I would be outraged. I would be up in arms. I would be probably halfway through writing an op-ed about this right now. This is exactly what we shouldn't be doing as a country, attacking people for freedom of speech. But I'm of two minds here. Number one, nothing's going to come of this, because it's going to end up in the courts and the courts are going to kill it. Mark Kelly has the same freedom of speech that every American has, and he can argue that he was exercising his free speech by doing this Democratic advertisement telling people not to obey illegal orders. On the other hand, I understand why Donald Trump is furious about this, because this is a part of that same tired Democratic trope, Democratic Party trope, that Donald Trump is so out of control that he's going to initiate a coup attempt at the end of this term, and he's going to try to remain as president for a third term. No, he's not. He knows that when he says that in public, that it drives the Democrats crazy. And so he enjoys doing it. And he asks Steve Bannon to do it. He's not going to remain on as president. Besides, he's going to be 82 years old, and he may not be alive in 3 years. Who knows? But the Democrats, in my view, just fell right into the trap like they always do. And then they make themselves look worse because already they tried the Russia thing, making it up out of whole cloth with the help of their friend John Brennan, and that didn't work. And now they're urging people to resist the president because, of course, he's going to initiate a coup attempt. I'm tired of this silliness. I really am.
I mean, so do you really think it's specifically about this idea that Trump would illegally try to remain for a third term,
yeah,
as opposed to, you know, something else, like, for example, troops who participate in ICE raids and maybe are not following proper procedures, or something else, invading Venezuela. You know, there's so many I mean, American troops are constantly asked and ordered to do things that are sketchy.
But let's look at Venezuela for a minute. Nobody's going to stop Donald Trump from invading Venezuela, Democrat or Republican, because Congress has ceded that authority. Congress has not declared war on another country since December the 8th, 1941. There was no declaration of war for Korea, no declaration of war for Vietnam or Grenada or Panama or Afghanistan or Iraq or anything else. They have ceded that authority. And so if they don't want Donald Trump to invade Venezuela, then they should pass legislation disallowing him. Which they easily could do. He could do it today if they wanted to.
Right. Well, that's true.
I don't think about Venezuela.
I mean, it does seem like the Mark Kelly thing, it's part and parcel with the 51 former intelligence officials letter. You know, it's a form of, I don't know, it's not quite lawfare, but it's a form of using official status or former official status and in order to throw your weight around and, you know, and try to throw a wrench in the works. And I can definitely see why Trump would be absolutely enraged by that.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
they
the thing is,
enrage him.
Well, on the other hand, yeah, and they're trying to enrage him.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I mean, it is true that, you know, as we've talked about here before recently, I mean, there is a problem for people in the military. And I don't think it's a Trump problem. I think it's baked into the system where it's like, you know, if you train military people to say you must follow orders.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but then, well, not illegal orders. And then, you know, as well as I do, better than, you know, 99 and 99 100% of the population, what happens when you try to get the U.S. government to follow its own laws? You know, you're the one who gets, you know, targeted and sent to prison. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you get court-martialed. If you're in the military, you disobey orders. You know, that's insubordination. And you get court-martialed and you go to the brig. You know, it's almost impossible to argue as a successful defense. Well, I was disobeying an unlawful order, sir.
Right. It is. It's difficult. But if an order is clearly unlawful, you're already taught, you're already trained to deny the order, to refuse the order. Right.
Although, you know, that in reality, I mean, I would just think if I were in the military, you're just sort of like, Yeah, I'm supposed to disobey an unlawful order, but we all know I'm not going to, because following orders is the better road to survival and promotion.
But the thing is, though, look at it this way. This PSA that the Democrats came up with was not, or maybe should not have been aimed at enlisted men. It should have been aimed at the generals.
True. Right? Because that's very true.
The generals know what's lawful and what's not lawful. And we already know that there have been a host of generals who have so far quietly opposed a lot of Donald Trump, what Donald Trump has been ordering, to the point where he's dismissed a bunch of them. But rather than do a PSA, which is really just propaganda,
yeah,
they should have discreetly been meeting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Well, would the Joint Chiefs have taken a meeting with them?
At the very least, the Joint Chiefs would have taken letters from them. But yeah, I think if the House Minority Leader or the ranking member on the Armed Services Committee wants to meet with you, or the Senate Minority Leader or the ranking member on the Senate Armed Services Committee wants to meet with you, yeah, you'll take that meeting.
You know, John, I also think this letter was bad politics. Right now, the American people are very clear in their polling that they're pissed at both parties
for not
caring about their concerns about, you know, their ability to pay their bills.
Exactly.
And to a lesser extent, healthcare. And they want the establishment, both parties, to cut, you know, to cut the shit, quit with the internecine feuding, and quit with the focuses on, you know, foreign adventurism, and focus on the problems of the American people, which are really serious. You know, I mean, prices are soaring and salaries are stagnating or, you know, in the danger of falling off a cliff once the AI revolution really comes to pass. I mean, it's bad politics. The Democrats are still focused on where the anti-Trump party. And it's like, dude, there's not going to be any anti-Trump. There's not going to be any Trump in 3 years.
That's right.
You know, where's your, I mean, just that's yesterday I was reading an idea. Come up with an idea. Yeah. Tell us what you're going to do about affordability. You know, I mean, it's like, oh, we need to message that. Yeah, but you have to have something to message.
And let me add something. In 3 years, J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz are going to be killing each other over who gets to be the next MAGA Republican nominee.
Yes, they will.
Okay? So while they're killing each other, the Democrats should be coming up with a well-honed, unified message. And they're not.
No, it's a... Well, they just don't have one. I mean, they can't. I don't even. They're so bereft of ideas, and that's true even about the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. I don't hear anything exciting coming out of Bernie or AOC or Ro Khanna or anyone like that.
No, in fact, AOC just took herself out of a primary race against Chuck Schumer. She also made an announcement yesterday that was mocked in the New York Post, saying that. That she stands behind Hakeem Jeffries, that he is her leader. Oh, like, Hakeem Jeffries, are you nuts?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and then there's that guy who wanted to run, after Mamdani won, I forget his name. And basically AOC and everyone else just said, oh yeah, he wanted to primary Hakeem. And they all like, no, you can't primary Hakeem. Like, what good is a progressive if they're literally squashing on their own, they're sitting on their own people?
That's right. That's right. Nothing good is going to come out of the Democratic Party as it stands right now. It's broken.
Before we move on from Mark Kelly, I did think it was worth noting that he's the only military veteran who's been targeted, and he's being targeted under the the Uniform Code of Military Justice, right? Instead of the others who are all civilians, the DOJ could have gone after them, I guess, for under the Sedition Act, but they're using the military option.
I think it's because he's still a reservist.
Yeah.
I think. Is that right?
That's my understanding as well.
Yeah.
All right. So let's, are you up for banging out, answering some questions?
Sure.
All right. So this is Venezuela related, but I think from Gregory Battis, CFA. What do we think about the NOTAM, that's a notice to airmen, issued Friday for Venezuela? In other words, don't fly over Venezuela if you are like in a civilian craft or whatever. Does that mean the U.S. will strike, John?
It means that the U.S. is keeping open the option to strike. So we would have to assume, yes, this is the way I read it. They've made a decision to strike. It may come as soon as, you know, couple of days, mm-hmm. but they're going to keep that option open. They're just warning civilian pilots. We may not begin.
Yeah, they're going to take advantage of the Thanksgiving weekend and the news and the news blackout.
Right, exactly.
For sure. At this point, I would assume there's lots of American drones already active over Venezuela.
No, there would have to be. Remember, and we've talked about this in the past, warfare is changing. And sooner rather than later, we're going to get to a point where very few actual human beings are going to be used in battle. It's going to be drones and mm-hmm. robots.
And it's Terminator.
There. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Terrifying.
It is.
Okay. Thank you, F you so for the dollar. you know what? I'm not gonna say thank you for the dollar. That was a profane comment, which I enjoyed reading, but I'm not gonna read on the air.
Okay.
Cyber in Jazero asks, what do you, John, think of Cybel or Sybil Edmonds? I don't even know who that is. I ask because with all the 9/11 stuff happening, she called Tucker a limited hangout.
I am not going to pull punches here. I think Sybil Edmonds is a fraud. She is not a whistleblower. She is a liar. She makes things up out of whole cloth to promote her own podcast, her own career. She has attacked very close, dear friends of mine as traitors, using the word traitors, accusing my best friend's wife of being a mole for Al-Qaeda. having an FBI investigation launched against her. She was exonerated, of course. Sybelle Edmonds is the only person in the history of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity to have the Sam Adams Award for Integrity in Intelligence revoked. She is not permitted to participate in VIPS events, and she's been cut off. She is not a part of the whistleblower community. I personally have nothing whatsoever to do with her.
Okay, that's free and that's totally clear. Askenazoid 5887 says, hello from Vienna, Austria, capital of the spies. What do you think about the Kurdish issue?
Austria.
Will there be a Kurdish state in one of the four states with a Kurdish population? So that would be Turkey, Iraq, Syria, and what am I missing?
Syria, Iran, Iraq, and Turkey.
Oh, Iran. Yeah. I forgot about Iran. Well, so, you know, if there's a great book about the Treaty of Versailles called Paris 1919. And basically, they vividly describe how when all the cartographers at the end of World War One were drawing up all the new borders, that most of which we know today, including carving up the Ottoman Empire, creating the borders of modern day Iraq and so on, that the Kurds were literally like school children waiting out in the Hall of Mirrors, as the big boys, the Brits and the Frogs and the Krauts, were inside doing carving up the world. And literally, the Kurds were like, can we have a... It's like, don't worry, we'll get to you. And literally, they kept kicking them down the road every day. This went on for months. And finally, the conference wrapped up, and literally the great powers forgot to create an independent state for Kurdistan. It was just an oversight. It wasn't like it wasn't personal. There was no animus. And this literally, that was 100 years ago. And here we still are. And the world has just never gotten around to figuring it out. They have an autonomous state in northern Iraq, with Erbil as the capital, right?
Yes.
Erbil. So, I don't know the answer to that, because it seems like it's a Taiwan situation. They're going to be living in permanent diplomatic limbo.
I have always felt a special closeness to the Kurds. From the very beginning of my career at the CIA, I worked very closely with both the Kurdish Democratic Party of Iraq and the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, also of Iraq. I made lasting long-term friendships with Kurds. My own personal belief is the Kurdish people are among the most heroic people on earth, and they have been screwed time and time again by all of the world's powers. I remember Masoud Barzani, the head of the KDP, being very proud to tell me that he was born in this period between 1946 and 1949, where there was very briefly an independent Kurdistan. And then it went away. The Turks will never allow a Kurdish homeland. The Iraqis, I think, have gone as far as they're going to go. The Iranians certainly would not allow one. The Syrians, we know for a fact, won't allow one, because they've already colluded with the Turks to stop something like that from happening. There are also Kurds in Armenia. There are a handful, there are a handful of Kurds in Azerbaijan. Neither of those countries are willing or even have the ability to allow an independent Kurdistan. So as much as it hurts my heart to say it, I don't think there will ever be an independent.
What if the Iraqi Kurdistan, which seems to me like that's the biggest game, that's the big game in town, right?
Yeah.
What if they declared independence? What would happen?
The fight would be over the oil, because most of Iraq's oil is in the Kurdish areas. That's really it. Listen.
So there would be war.
There would be war. if Kurdistan in Iraq were in the western desert, where there's nothing but sand, I don't think anybody would care. But because that's where the oil is, that's where the fight would be.
Effie, so thanks for another dollar. Thoughts on the release of RFK? He says felching. I'm pretty sure filching is probably the word he's looking for. Laden love poems.
That's the funniest thing I heard today.
It could be felching. I don't know. Who knows? I'm not getting into the definition of felching.
No judgment.
No judge. Yeah, no, it's cool. It's 2025. You want to felch? You felch. All right. Well, I don't know. I have to admit, that I think, you know, so what he's referring to here, I'm assuming he's a he, is this story between about these that's been breaking all over like the Atlantic and places like that, and the New York Times, about the this sort of affair of the heart between this disgraced New York reporter. What was her name? Not Lizza. Lizza is the, there's two, oh, it's Nuzzo, and Nuzzo, N-U-Z-Z-O. She was 30 and she was basically sexting RFK Jr. And then right, and nowadays her now former husband or former fiance is like all over the place, disgracing himself by ratting her out in public and finding out everything that, you know, basically releasing the texts that he found between. I mean, it's like, man, they're acting like such a pair of little kids. She just wrote a book about it, about her love for RFK Jr. She says by all that she didn't sleep with him. RFK says he never slept with her. Basically, it was just like they were hot for each other, but nothing ever came of it. Why do we care, John?
We shouldn't care, but so many Americans believe that RFK is a scumbag, including many members of his own family, believe he's a scumbag who's unable to control himself and is nothing but bad, bad, bad for the country. And so it's out there. We see the same kind of news on a lesser scale, but the same kind of news about Congressman Dan Crenshaw, who lost an eye in Afghanistan, who can't keep his zipper up and can't keep control of himself, despite the fact that he's married to one of the most beautiful women in Texas and has an 18-month-old at home. This is, I mean, this is Washington. Men are pigs. What can you...
But in this case, this was a zipless fuck, to quote Erica Jong.
Yeah. It's true. But the thing is people want to hate on RFK.
Because yeah,
he's such a scumbag.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time like being mean to him just because he did so much good work for the environment and also for during the 2004 Ohio election controversy, and not to mention what happened to his fucking father. I mean, I mean, he has to be broken, you know.
He's got it.
Plus, he loves animals. Okay, U.S. XXX A-Rod, thanks for the dollar. Are we saying that there's zero doubt in our mind that Trump doesn't leave, refuses to leave, let's just say, or causes an illegal military action, I guess, in 2008, 2009? I wouldn't say zero doubt, because zero doubt is a big thing. I mean, it's possible. You know, we're students of history, John, so it's possible.
We are. But I'm going to...
But I don't think it's... I think it's highly unlikely.
Highly unlikely, and I'm going to draw a parallel. There was... not an attempted coup. There was just a rumbling of an attempted coup in 1940, where a group of generals began or initiated the earliest kind of plotting against FDR, Franklin D. Roosevelt. When they approached a handful of generals who were opposed to any such thing, they were outed. FDR didn't want to make a big deal about it. He didn't want to, you know, parade them in front of the press as traitors. And so they were forced into retirement. But I'm confident.
And there was also kind of the Douglas MacArthur kind of flirtation with the seizure of power, too.
And then he was fired.
Right.
Regardless of how popular he was. And he probably could have gotten himself elected president. But he was fired, and that was the end of it. And I think, you know, having worked with these people at the Pentagon, general officers, we have a lot of generals. We have like 880 generals at the Pentagon. I'm confident that they're going to universally put down their foot. There aren't very many generals like, what's his name, formerly of DEA that just got a pardon last year, Michael...
Flynn?
Flynn. There aren't many Mike Flynns at the Pentagon.
Yeah,
he was definitely the exception to the rule.
David Day, 9967, he never catches us live. What's happening in Sudan and why is no one talking about it in the media?
Yeah, what's happening in Sudan is a civil war. And oddly enough, the Saudis are on one side, the Emiratis are on the other side. And we're seeing a genocide take place. True crimes against humanity, women, children, the elderly, the sick, just being slaughtered wholesale. And nobody cares because there's no oil and there are no...
As far as we know.
As far as we know. And there are no rare earth metals.
You know, I was thinking about, you know, we talked about Tajikistan yesterday. And it's like, you know, so there's a gruesome civil war there from 1993 to 2001 or two or so. And no one gave a shit about it. And by some accounts, as much as 20% of the entire population was killed either from famine or war during that period. And then, you know, the grand irony is no one cared because, you know, there was no oil, there was no gas. A few years ago, though, there's new technology of very deep oil drilling that revealed that, in fact, Tajikistan does have oil. You just have to drill a mile and a half down to get it.
A mile and a half.
But they can do it now. So they're getting it. So the Tajiks are going to have money. They might even be able to pay back those Chinese Belt and Road node loans.
I read an article recently. You just made me think of it. About the deepest hole ever drilled. And the deepest hole ever drilled was in one of the former Soviet republics, and maybe it was Kazakhstan. And they got down like through the Earth's crust. They went down a couple of miles. But then when they tried to go deeper, every time they would send down a drill, it would melt.
Right.
And that, so they just couldn't go any lower.
Yeah, it depends, right? The Earth's crust is, I mean, as you'd expect, it's uneven. It's not the same width everywhere, right? So in places like, in some places, it's not that far down. I mean, we're sitting on top of a giant ball of burning molten rock. It's kind of insane when you really think about it. It's like, it's spinning through space at thousands of miles per hour and you don't feel it. Like, you know, no wonder, like, you know, there's science deniers. They're like, none of this makes any sense. It doesn't feel real. Hey, Mike 09, thanks for the $20. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Appreciate you as well. Is Randy Fine an Israeli agent or just a fellow traveler? That one's for you, John.
Geez, you know, I think probably just a fellow traveler. One thing about the Israelis, they're usually not so crude as to put their agents right in our faces. So I'm thinking that he's a fellow traveler. Yeah.
John, Phil Chats was listening to a recent interview with you and you named Rick Prado. What did he do to be added to the list with Joe Rod?
Rick Prado was the head of the CIA Counterterrorism Center's assassination squad. And his job was to go out every week and murder people who, as a rule, had never been accused of a crime, had never been charged with a crime, had never been found guilty of a crime. They just showed up on a CIA list and were supposed to take the CIA's word for it that they're bad people. And Rick would just go out and murder them. Rick came to the CIA late in his career. He was recruited into the CIA by Jose Rodriguez. And according to the Miami Herald and Vanity Fair magazine, which did deep dives on Rick Prado, what made him qualified to join the CIA was that he had been a hitman for the Cali cartel. He was also accused of a double murder in Miami. It ended up never being solved, but the Miami police had credible evidence that Rick had committed this murder. Listen, I sat 20 feet from the guy. He was a nice guy. He said good morning every day. He'd buy coffees for everybody. He's a good guy. But there you have it.
There indeed. US XXX A-Rod, thanks for the $2. Additionally, could they recall Mark Kelly and try him by military tribunal?
That's whatever a good that question. Means.
I think they could.
I think they could. I don't think they'd have the balls to do it, but I think they could.
I mean, he's a very popular guy. I mean, especially in institutional, inside the Beltway, he's very popular.
The guy was
and he has major media support. They love him. He's been talked about as a presidential contender. Mm-hmm.
And remember, he was one of the four finalists to be Kamala Harris's running mate.
Yeah, that's right. Sean Pat, 6882. By the way, she might have won with him. Sean Pat, 6882. Thanks for the $20. Have a good Thanksgiving to you as well. Hamzabila, what do you think about Algeria purchasing Su-57s from Russia? And do you think Russia, with the weight of war, could provide those jets? Well, I'm sure they could provide them.
I bet they're old. I bet they're older models. What do you think?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, the Russians aren't going to sell the Algerians anything like up to date and tasty. They're just not going to. They don't trust them enough. And not to mention, the Algerians can't afford it, right? So, they're a developing country. Sim Yong Yang, John, could we talk about Trump ending temporary protective status for Somali refugees in Minnesota?
Yeah. Wow. I was shocked when I read that. Shocked. Listen, I understand that Trump has this reputation as a hater, right? And he lifts the protections on Venezuelans. He lifts the protections on Cubans. Okay, I get it. But Somalis? I mean, they're like Somalis and Sudanese and South Sudanese are the people that need the protection the most. I just don't understand this policy decision. It doesn't make any kind of sense to me.
The thing is that not much is explained, and things that are not well explained, we should talk about Venezuela, but we have a few more questions. A little follow-up for the discussion about the Kurds. John, you say, but aren't the Assyrians in that desert area and they're also stateless? Yes. Is that just because they're a smaller population that we don't care about them?
They've never really agitated for independence, though. The capital of Assyria is Mosul. And Mosul, of course, now it's the third largest city in Iraq. It used to be the second, but it was so decimated during the ISIS war that a lot of people were killed, a lot of others left. It's also the military city of Iraq, the military headquarters of Iraq. And there's a large Christian population there as well. I have no problem with the Assyrians wanting independence or wanting autonomy or whatever. And Mosul should be their capital.
Everybody gets a state.
You know, who are we to decide who gets freedom and who doesn't?
Good point. FUSO, thanks for the extra dollar. Thoughts on the California governor's race, which is, of course, becoming vacated by my really good friend, Gavin Newsom, in 2028. I think, honestly, it's like Zhou Enlai said to Henry Kissinger about the French Revolution. I think it's too early to tell. There's going to be a lot of candidates, and it's going to be, that's how things roll there. They end up with like six or eight people, all of whom are pretty serious, and then a bunch of weirdos down the ballot. Yeah. And because it's ranked choice voting, and the parties don't matter. So really anyone can run, and it's really easy. You don't need that many ballot petitions to petition signatures to get on the ballot. So I think it's pretty easy. Tammy, for you, John, is the CIA still sending missionaries into places like Sudan? And then we really need to talk about Venezuela.
It's never been my experience that the CIA sends missionaries. That was specifically banned in 1975 coming out of the Church Committee. I've never heard of that. You would have to get a presidential waiver to do something like that, and that would be not forthcoming with most presidents.
So I am just, as I said at the top of the hour, by the way, please like, follow, and share the show, and thank you all for watching. And we've decided we will be taking Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday off this week, so we'll be back Monday. We're here Monday through Friday, 9 a.m., but we will have some reruns on. So I think during the reruns, the live chats work. So we won't be here watching them or babysitting them, but you guys can talk to each other if you are so inclined. Robbie, if you have an ad, put it up whenever you're ready, and I'll read it. Let's talk about Venezuela. This freaks me out. So the U.S. State Department basically made up this term, Cartel de las Solas, which is not, it's a term that exists, but it's not an organization. So no. Basically, a bunch of opposition. Now, let me read this ad and then continue that. Still haven't tried 1775 coffee? Now's your shot. The 1775 starter kit just dropped, only 1,000 units. You're getting the bold dark roast that hits hard, the smooth medium roast, and the vitality mushroom coffee for clean energy and laser focus, no crash, all single origin, small batch, toxin free, and mold free. Plus, you're also getting a gold spoon clip because freedom isn't scooped with plastic. A frother strong enough to stir up your coffee and your mother-in-law's opinions in a black 1775 tumbler. $170 worth of coffee and gears, yours for $99. This is for the ones who've been watching 1775 blow up on Rumble, wondering if it's actually worth it. Spoiler, it is. Go to 1775coffee.com/studio and grab your starter kit before they're gone. Bold beans, clean fuel, and a morning routine that stands for something just like Rumble does. So Venezuelan opposition journalists, a number of years ago, came up with this term, cartel de las solas. Solas means stars. Stars, in this case, refers to the stars that Venezuelan generals have on their uniforms, on their epaulettes, right? And so it's like, what is the cartel of the stars? The cartel of the stars is basically a term that referring to corrupt military generals, usually corrupted by the drug trade, which is cocaine, not fentanyl. And it does not really affect the United States, as John, you've pointed out very well. These are drugs that go to Africa and then from Africa possibly to Europe and elsewhere. But basically, that's where they go. And so the yesterday, the United States State Department, a major organ of the American government, officially designated this term, let's just say, this as an official U.S. designated terrorist organization on par with, say, Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. They did not. It would be like designating Spectre from the 007 movies as an official U.S. State Department designated organization. I mean, so this is really surreal. I mean, you and I both think the odds are better than 50-50. We're going to see an airstrike against Venezuela this week. The justification for overthrowing Nicolas Maduro and his regime and killing people on the ground in Venezuela is that we're going after a non-existent organization that is non-existently terrorizing someone who are exporting drugs to a country that is not the United States, and that those drugs don't even make their way to the United States anyway. And there's been no attempt whatsoever to sell this to the American public. There's no attempt, you know, we don't have any government officials going on the air and saying, you know, Venezuela, they're evil and they suck. No, we're just going to do it. I mean, this is a weird way to have a war.
Yeah, you can say that again. You know, I can only imagine the conversations that have taken place in the State Department. You know, when John Kennedy called American diplomats the best and the brightest, in most cases they are. They're the best and the brightest. They went to the best schools, best educations, right? I remember working with a guy at the State Department who was constantly making literary allusions. Like he'd say, somebody would say, oh, you need to write a cable and say this. And he'd say, I'm not going to tilt at that windmill. And I remember thinking, wow, he is so well-read. So smart. Can you imagine sitting in the room when they're having this conversation about making this group, which doesn't actually exist, into a designated terrorist organization?
Why not just declare the government of the Republic of Venezuela a terrorist organization?
Exactly. Exactly.
Libyans,
let's say, or the Iraqis.
But it would be iffy, but at least it would be, you know, you'd be living within the world of reality.
Yes, you're exactly right.
So why do you think they understand? I mean, obviously they're relying on the ignorance of the American people and the fecklessness and the incompetence of the American media and their inability to communicate to the American people. Like, where are the fact checkers when you need them?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that's what it is, right? They're just like relying. It's just like stupid propaganda.
Yep.
It's like all the stuff about Tren de Aragua taking over the entire country. This thing that nobody'd ever heard of.
Right. Nobody had ever heard of, which had never declared war on the United States and had never initiated an attack of any kind.
Okay. Well, we're going to watch that. And I guess if things really blow up, we'll do a show over the weekend. But Patrick Crabtree, 7104, have we all seen or heard the new Age of Disclosure documentary? Highly recommended. What would your thoughts, John, on some of the characterization of CIA processes and USAP structures that they assert? I have not seen it.
Check it out. Thank you.
Okay. Big picture question from Longhorn Clemens to both. Love that moniker. Where do you think this escalating lawfare war goes?
Ooh, oh, I like man. This.
Biden weaponized the DOJ, and now Trump is clearly doing the same thing. Does this keep going? To what? Yeah. In American politics, it's always a race to the bottom. Once you've opened a can of worms, it just keeps, you know, that's it. The other side will keep doing it, and everyone's going to forget who started it, and it's not going to matter.
Although the Greeks would say that when Pandora's box was opened and everything got out, all the problems of the world got out, the only thing that remained inside the box was hope.
Oh. And maybe the Cartel de las Solas. Right. But Manuel Ducat, what do we think about Twitter outing the Israeli, Russian, Indian, and African right-wing bot farms? Oh, yeah, that's a topic that our new junior producer pointed out. Not Robbie. This is someone new. I don't know. I don't want to mention his name yet before we know that it's okay. But yeah, that is a good point. I mean, so it turns out a lot of political speech on X is, of course, to me, this is like, I'm shocked to learn that there's gambling going on here. I mean, we all knew that this was the case, but I guess it's interesting to see it documented. We knew that there were these massive operations, and I guess we do the same thing too, right? Don't we?
Yeah, we do the same thing. Sure we do. We just hate when other countries do it.
Okay. Following up, this is a follow-up on the Somalia thing. Isn't it because welfare funds were abused or something like that, and the money was transferred to Al-Shabaab in Somalia?
I hadn't heard about a transfer to Shabaab, but one of the things that the administration is complaining about is that there is this massive welfare fraud. But there's nothing to prove that any such welfare fraud is actually taking place. So that is certainly the narrative that we're getting from the White House and the Department of Health and Human Services. But it's one of those situations where we're just supposed to take their word for it. They're not offering up any proof.
Here we go again. Fluidic Poly, John, I like this question a lot. This is for you. How much does the CIA know about countries like China, considering how little they knew about Al-Qaeda? It would be a lot harder to infiltrate a country like China with its massive population. And obviously it's different ethnicity.
Yeah, totally the opposite is the truth. Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda wasn't a country, you couldn't put spies in your embassy there. We didn't know where they were being trained. They would move their training centers, so you couldn't direct your satellites against them. They didn't have official communications, a military that was communicating, so you couldn't intercept their communications. They didn't have graduate students in colleges around universities around the United States to recruit them, to send them back to work in their government. So it's completely different. It's far, far easier to work against China.
And Al-Qaeda really needed you to be vouched for. If you read a book like Inside the Jihad or something like that, they had to say, someone had to say, we know Al-John. He's a good guy. We can trust him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's hard to get.
Yeah, that's hard to get. That's right.
Happy Tuesday, from Sean Whitman. Would we agree that a majority of the illegal drugs coming into the U.S. are not actually coming from Venezuela? Yes. But are coming from China and other Asian countries? I'd say Mexico. Well,
the accusation, at least as far as fentanyl goes, is that most of the fentanyl is coming from China.
Via Mexico.
Directly to the U.S. They ship much of it to Mexico for shipment to the U.S. and some of it to Canada to come in across the northern border. So as far as fentanyl goes, yes.
Totally my understanding as well. If you so, which Get Smart character represents you the most?
Oh my God.
Don't have to answer that. It's just funny. If you so is on a roll today.
Oh yeah. Ray C2020. He heard the Pandora's box story. That's good. My mom loved that story. She used to say it all the time.
I like it. John, this is from Finem Dakhlflor. I can't pronounce that. What do you know about the Norwegians' involvement in supplying the Israelis with heavy water? Was the CIA involved, and have you ever worked with the Norwegians?
I don't know why the Norwegians would have heavy water. I haven't heard that they had supplied heavy water to the Israelis. But the Norwegians, I'll tell you a funny thing about the Norwegians. I never paid any attention to Norway when I was at the CIA until I was the executive assistant to the CIA's deputy director. And he used to talk about Norway all the time. And he used to always say that he was going to write a letter to the president for George Tenet to deliver, asking that Norway become the 51st state. And he said, they might as well become the 51st state. They do literally everything we ask them to do anyway. So they might as well have statehood. And that was a revelation to me because I had never encountered a Norwegian, you know, on an intelligence basis. Huh. I never had any occasion ever to work with the Norwegians, but it was my understanding at the end of my career that we were joined at the hip with the Norwegians.
Hexanachi has another question for you, John. Why didn't you promote your own podcasts when you were on Rogan and Dalton Fisher?
And then Rogan would not permit me
some of the topics.
Yeah, Rogan sent me a very long list of do's and don'ts. They were actually all don'ts. Don't tell anybody the location of the studio. Don't take any pictures. If you want a picture, Rogan will take the picture and give it to you. Don't describe the neighborhood that the studio is in. Don't describe the security measures at the studio. Don't tell anybody earlier than 7 days out that you're going to be on the show. You know, stuff like that. It was onerous. But one of the don'ts was I was not allowed to promote anything. And believe me, I had a shitload of things to promote.
I'm sure.
Yeah, Ted and I complain all the time that we're not making any money. We're literally not making any money.
It's true.
We do this because we like it. It's fun. We love the engagement. And we hope that we can build it into something eventually.
That's true.
But I really, really wanted to promote it on Rogan. And they told me.
I think it would have. Yeah, it would have taken us to the next level for sure.
Yes, it would have.
All right, let's talk about, so while we go to war, maybe, or war lit against Venezuela, we are in, there's a, to quote Bedazzled, we're in danger of a terrible peace breaking out between Russia and Ukraine, or maybe and just an end to the conflict, which is sort of the same thing. So the Americans have been meeting with the Russians in Abu Dhabi over the weekend. That seems to have wrapped up. The U.S. also met with the Ukrainians, as we talked about yesterday. And it's probably worth talking about how the Europeans, I want to talk about this paranoia thing that's going on. Like, basically, Europe is acting like, you know, as goes Ukraine, so goes the Baltics, and even so goes France, which is like, yeah. Have you guys even looked at a map lately? But, you know, the French, I don't even understand this. So the French had military conscription until the 80s. They got rid of it. Thank the Lord, I'm a French citizen. I had to get a waiver for serving because I was in college for having to, I would have served. They're not talking about bringing it back, but they're talking about establishing a new paid military program. I'm very unclear what the difference is between this and the current military that they have now, which is like ours. It's volunteer military, you enlist. But anyway, my understanding is basically the French are looking to expand their military. Croatia, Poland, other countries in Europe are bringing back the draft. Or some version of it, like sort of like, oh, you're not really drafted, but just that everyone has to be trained to serve for military service if in case there's a draft. So basically, everyone's skittish. Is this just paranoia, or do they really think that Vladimir Putin plans to invade Eastern, Central, and Western Europe?
I can't imagine that they believe that. But Patrick Crabtree 7104 is alerting us to breaking news from CNN.
Great.
That the Ukrainians have accepted the peace deal. And I just went over to CNN And it says, breaking news, U.S. official says Ukraine agrees to deal. Zelensky says much work ahead.
Well, so let's talk about that. We were going to, we may have to table our, I do want to talk about the Zoomer thing, and we may have to do that next week. But this is obviously super important. The Ukrainians said they basically whittled down the talk, the 28 points to what, 18?
That's right.
So obviously there's been some modifications. So, okay, Ukraine has agreed to a deal with the U.S. after negotiating, but Russia has not negotiated with, has not negotiated this deal yet. So it's too early to say the peace is at hand. Isn't that true?
Absolutely, yes. It's far too early to say peace is at hand. When Zelensky says much work ahead, much work ahead. And don't forget, we're finding ourselves now with Donald Trump on one side of this thing and the NATO leadership on the other side. And so this is going to take time.
I mean, I think my understanding is that one of the two of the points that were eliminated from Trump's plan were basically half demilitarization of the Ukrainian armed forces, and also the requirement that Ukraine not join NATO. I think the Russians might be able to live with the first, but not the second.
Not the second. The second is a red line for them. I agree.
So,
but like I said,
it could be a throwaway for the Ukrainians.
It doesn't make any difference if Ukraine's in NATO or not. All the United States has to do is to declare that we have granted them major non-NATO ally status, the same as Australia, Saudi Arabia, Japan, South Korea, Bahrain. It's the same as being in NATO. It's the same.
Could the United States, could Russia agree to that? Because effectively it's like they're in NATO, but they're not in NATO.
Right. Right.
I mean, for the Russians, is this about symbolism, or are they actually worried about sitting on a powder keg right on their border?
Yeah, I think the latter. I really do.
So they would not be able to agree to that, to the U.S.
They're not going to
guarantee.
I mean, that's something that they don't get a vote in. All the United States has to do is just promise to protect Ukraine. That's it. That's what non-NATO status is. The United States promises to protect you if another country invades. That's it.
Robbie is suggesting that maybe tomorrow we should do a full Q&A show, but we're not doing a show tomorrow, Robbie. So no, we're not going to do a Q&A show. But we can do that next week, for sure.
Sure.
And once we get the Discord up and running, we can take some audio questions and see how that works. But we might have to do that Rumble only because of YouTube's terms, and we can't control what people are saying. So good point there. So, let's talk about Ukraine. When the Europeans are saying that they're worried about an invasion, a Russian invasion, you know, the fate of all of Europe hangs in the balance. Are they just doing that because basically it's the military industrial complex and they're just trying to gin up the economy and it's that thing? Or, you know, I know I asked this earlier, but you're really sure they don't actually think that the Russians are coming for them?
I don't. I don't think that they believe the Russians are coming for them. No. Now, I think that they're probably worried about little border skirmishes, a drone crossing a border, probes, spy networks. Sure. But no, I really don't believe that any European country is genuinely afraid that the Russians are going to invade them.
I agree. Or if they do think that, they're fucking insane.
Yeah, they're nuts.
Verbal Kent, question for both of us. Why is for Russia joining NATO such a red line for Ukraine, but it wasn't for Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania? I say look at a map. Ukraine is right on the Russian border.
So are the three Baltics.
Sure, but the Nazis came in through Ukraine in 1941.
Yes, the Nazis did. Also, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia joined NATO when the Russians still believed us when we said that we meant no harm and it's a new era and we're going to be partners and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Plus, those countries are so teeny tiny.
That's the thing. And that's a long border that the Ukrainians have with, with Russia.
Huge, yes.
And it's like, you're just not going to forget that. It's like, you know, it's like 9/11 times a million for them.
Yeah.
Okay, very quickly, we should talk very quickly about this healthcare thing. So turns out Trump was willing to renew the Obamacare subsidies for a year. That was his plan. He took it to Congress, and Congress, the Republicans in Congress, basically took a big shit on it and said, like, nah, we're not going to do that. It's just, you know, it's we're just not going to allow that to happen. I mean, what's it's kind of you know, I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, before she issued during her resignation statement, said that one of the biggest problems the Republican Party has is that they've never come up with any kind of plan for healthcare, and it's an issue that Americans really, really care about. Looks like Donald Trump gets that. So what does this say about the schism within the GOP?
You know, I'm of the belief, Ted, that the Republican Party is in as much danger of having a civil war as the Democratic Party is.
Agreed.
You know, we take the occasional dump on the Democrats here, and it's well-deserved. But the Republicans are in the same position. They pretend to be all unified right now, and that's because they're afraid of Donald Trump. But when Trump is no longer president, or when he's such
a lame duck. He's the glue keeping it all together.
Say that again?
He's the glue keeping it all together.
He is. He's the glue. He's the one who holds the whole party together. This party doesn't know what it wants to be. Does it want to be a populist party, which is what MAGA, you know, is supposed to be right now? Or does it want to be the party of John McCain and Lindsey Graham? Mm-hmm. And it pretends right now it wants to be the populist party, but I'm not buying it. And I think that the Republicans are on the verge of a self-destruction, just like the Democrats are.
Totally agree. Before we call it a show, let's bring in producer Robbie, just to remind people to follow us over to Rumble. Robbie?
Howdy. Yep. So they kind of touched on it earlier, they being our esteemed hosts, John and Ted. I will be posting some Rumble Premium content. It will be going live today. We're also going to be doing some more stuff over the holiday. So if y'all could just come over and follow us on Rumble, we'd appreciate it. And a big reason for that is for every dime that YouTube pays them, Rumble pays them 90 cents. So when we say it pays significantly better, it really does. And also, unlike YouTube, Rumble has never censored John and Ted. So if you want to hear just no-nonsense free speech commentary from your two favorite leftists like those two, come on over. The weather's fine.
Thank you very much, Robbie. And so anyway, I'll see Robbie in about a minute over at the TMI show. John, it's always a pleasure. Have a great Thanksgiving weekend starting tomorrow. We're normally here Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time, and we will have reruns running with the live feed during that time, but you'll be Johnless and Tedless during that time. Please stay tuned for the TMI show with Ted Rall and Manila Chan coming right up right now. Stay tuned and have a great Thanksgiving, and for you and yours. Bye, John.
Bye, Ted.